Imagine returning from this, highly anticipated 2-week vacation in Rome. You drop your bags in the hallway and you just find your house completely gutted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, every valuable item just gone. And the burglars didn't just guess you're away, right? They knew exactly when your flight left and when it returned, all because they had hacked your travel itinerary.
Right, which is just a terrifying thought.
It really is. And today, that digital to physical nightmare is, well, it's an imminent reality for millions of people. So, welcome to a custom-tailored deep dive analyzing a stack of tech news dropping right around mid-April 2026.
Glad to be diving into this with you.
Yeah, because as we sorted through the reports today, this profound tension emerged. We're witnessing this high-stakes tug of war between the, frankly, incredibly fragile infrastructure holding our digital lives together and the absolute powerhouse armor-plated devices we are suddenly putting into our pockets.
It really is a jarring dichotomy, you know. On
Yeah.
one side, we have consumer hardware making
Wow.
these leaps in processing and battery technology that honestly seem to defy the laws of physics. Yeah, completely.
But that hardware is fundamentally tethered to cloud infrastructure, right? Like servers and databases that are
Yeah.
currently showing some severe structural cracks.
Right.
It's incredibly easy to get distracted by shiny new 10-inch folding screens or, ultra-fast charging. But to understand where consumer tech is actually heading, we have to look at the hostile environment that's forcing those innovations in the first place.
Okay, let's unpack this, because our first source illustrates that hostile environment perfectly. Between April 13th and 15th, 2026, Booking.com suffered a colossal data breach.
A massive one, yeah.
Over 15 million users affected, and hackers made off with names, emails, and phone numbers. But the critical alarm bells are ringing over two specific data sets here.
Right, the sensitive stuff.
Exactly. 3 million encrypted credit cards and 8 million physical home addresses. And the suspected cause, a targeted employee phishing campaign, or maybe a SQL injection. Now, I have to push back on this narrative a bit.
Go for it. We are in 2026. How are multi-billion-dollar global enterprises still falling victim to basic SQL injections? I mean, this feels like handing your house keys to a valet and then discovering the entire parking garage's security protocol is just like one sleepy guard with a clipboard.
I love that. The valet analogy works perfectly because it highlights the vulnerability of a handoff. Let's look at the mechanics of a SQL injection real quick.
Sure, lay it out.
So you have a login box or a search field on a website. You are supposed to type your name, like John. But instead, a malicious actor types a raw database command into that simple text field.
Something like a drop table.
Exactly. Something like drop table users.
Yeah.
And if the website's back-end code is poorly written and doesn't sanitize or filter that input, the database engine reads the command instead of the text and literally executes it.
Unbelievable.
Right. It's a fundamental failure to separate user data from administrative instructions. And when an organization like Booking scales to thousands of employees and millions of daily transactions, layering new code over legacy systems, well, those unpatched input fields inevitably slip through the cracks.
And the human error side, like the phishing, is just as insidious. But I want to pivot back to the physical addresses because that is where this breaches the digital wall, so to speak.
Yeah, that is the core danger here. Look, a compromised credit card is a massive headache, right?
Sure, but you call the bank.
Exactly. Banks have fraud departments, the card gets canceled.
Yeah.
But physical addresses paired with travel itineraries, that elevates this to a severe physical security risk. Malicious actors now possess a verified list of 8 million affluent travelers, their home addresses, and the exact dates those homes will be empty.
Which is just a burglar's dream.
It really is. And beyond the burglary risk to you, from a corporate standpoint, this is a catastrophic regulatory failure under GDPR in Europe. Failing to protect this highly specific combination of user data, it will result in astronomical fines.
I can imagine. So, what should people actually do?
Well, for anyone utilizing Booking, the immediate actions are just non-negotiable. Force a password change right now, lock down your account with two-factor authentication, and closely monitor your physical mail and bank accounts.
Okay, so Booking.com is the house getting broken into. But if the house is compromised, our next source suggests the municipal water supply itself is contaminated. We aren't just talking about a consumer website failing here.
No, we're really not.
We're talking about the core infrastructure of the internet sitting wide open.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the tools designed to keep the internet running smoothly are often the most lucrative targets for hackers. Our sources detail a critical vulnerability, CVE 2026-33032.
Catchy name.
Right. It's in a platform called Zenksui. Now, Ingzeeks is the web server software routing traffic for a massive percentage of the global internet, and Namezigi is the visual dashboard administrators use to manage those servers.
And the severity score for this vulnerability is a 9.8 out of 10, which sounds bad, obviously, but I want to clarify what a 9.8 actually means in practice.
It's as bad as it gets.
Right, because a 9.8 doesn't mean a hacker picked a highly complex, state-of-the-art lock on a vault. It means the bank building literally doesn't have doors.
It means they don't even have to walk into the bank. The 9.8 score is assigned because this flaw allows for remote code execution, or RCE, without any authentication whatsoever.
Wow.
Yeah, no username, no password, no spoofed credentials required. The mechanism here relies on path traversal and command injection.
Okay, walk us through how path traversal physically works on a server.
Think of a server's file system like a high-security office building. The public website is the lobby.
Okay, makes sense.
And visitors are only ever supposed to be in the lobby. Path traversal is a flaw where a hacker can essentially type a few characters, usually something like ... into a web request.
And what does that do?
It tells the server to back out of the public lobby folder, bypass the security desk entirely, and walk straight into the basement where the electrical panels and core operating system files are kept.
Oh, that's not good.
Not at all. Once they are in those restricted directories, command injection allows them to run malicious code as if they were the system administrator.
And the sources note this isn't just theoretical. Hackers have been actively exploiting this since March 2026, targeting over 50,000 vulnerable servers globally.
Yeah, 50,000.
They're using it to install backdoors, quietly mine cryptocurrency, or, you know, conscript these servers into massive DDoS botnets.
The sheer scale is alarming. System administrators running Zenksui must immediately update to version 2.3.6 or higher to patch this. It's a stark reminder that convenience features, like a user-friendly web interface for complex server management, frequently become the very attack vectors that bring the whole system down.
And, you know, this inherent fragility in the cloud, it forces a massive rethink for consumer technology. If the servers holding our data are constantly under siege, the logical solution is to stop sending our data to the servers in the first place.
Exactly. Keep it local.
Which brings us to the software leaps happening in the April 2026 Android Canary update. This fundamentally changes how our phones handle information.
It does. Android Canary is Google's highly experimental beta channel, currently pushing updates to the Pixel 8, 9, and newer devices. And you are totally right to frame it as a reaction to cloud vulnerability.
Because it's all about moving away from the cloud.
Right. We're seeing a concerted shift toward a zero-trust model, moving the heavy lifting from the server rack directly to the local device.
And here's where it gets really interesting. They are introducing advanced offline natural language processing. So live translation, voice assistance, text summaries, it's all happening entirely on the phone's local silicon without pinging a Google server at all.
Which is a huge leap.
Huge. Now, obviously that is fantastic if you are hiking in a dead zone with zero bars of service. But functionally, this is a massive privacy shield. If the audio of your private meetings or the text of your unencrypted emails never physically leaves your phone, well, it mathematically cannot be stolen in a Booking.com-style database breach.
Exactly. It shrinks your personal attack surface drastically. Mm-hmm. And Android Canary is leaning heavily into user transparency with Privacy Dashboard 3.0.
Oh, right. The new dashboard.
Yeah, it's no longer just a static menu telling you an app used your microphone yesterday. It features an interactive timeline and real-time alerts. It shows you exactly when, how, and why an app is attempting to access local hardware sensors.
But keeping all this data processing on the phone creates a massive computational burden, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Right, because if the phone is doing the job of a cloud server, it's going to burn through its battery by 10 a.m.
Which is exactly why the Canary update includes AI-powered smart memory management. Loading an application from a cold start, you know, waking up the processor, retrieving data from deep storage that requires a massive spike in electrical current.
Okay.
So this new predictive OS learns your daily habits. It knows you open your email at 8:00 a.m. and your podcast app at 8 a.m.
That's a bit creepy, but useful.
Yeah, a little spooky. But it intelligently preloads those specific apps into a suspended low-power state in your RAM. Because the apps are already hovering in memory, the processor doesn't have to surge to open them.
And what's the real-world impact of that?
The result is a 40% faster app launch time and a 15% reduction in overall battery consumption.
Wow, 15% just from software. And they are applying this predictive logic to gaming as well, right? with AI frame pacing.
They are. The physics of mobile gaming are brutal on a device. Rendering 3D graphics generates immense heat. AI frame pacing dynamically predicts the processing load required for every single individual frame of a game.
Wait, every single frame?
Every single one. It allocates the exact system resources needed milliseconds before the frame renders. This eliminates wasted processing power. It reduces visual lag by 30%, but crucially, it lowers the internal device temperature by a massive 8 degrees Celsius.
8 degrees is a lot for something in your hand.
It's huge. Now, Canary is highly experimental, so listeners shouldn't install it on their primary work phones just yet. But it signals a complete paradigm shift from reactive software to highly predictive, locally managed operating systems.
But software can only do so much optimization, right? If you are running intense offline natural language processing and rendering 3D games, the physical footprint of the phone has to adapt. You just can't run this kind of predictive OS on a tiny 5-year-old slab of glass.
No, you really can't.
So hardware is suddenly taking some wild, counterintuitive leaps.
The form factor has to evolve to accommodate the utility. Our sources highlight the newly announced Huawei Pura X Max, launching for the Chinese market. It is the world's first landscape foldable phone.
Okay, I'm looking at the schematics for this, and I genuinely cannot wrap my head around the ergonomics.
It's definitely different.
Different is an understatement. When you unfold it, it reveals a 10.2-inch inner display with a 16:10 aspect ratio. It's essentially the exact shape of a widescreen laptop monitor. If I hold that up to my ear to take a phone call, I'm going to look like I'm holding an open book or a flattened brick against my face. Who is the actual target audience for this design?
Well, it completely abandons traditional smartphone ergonomics, but that's a deliberate choice. They are betting that voice calls are the least important thing you do on this device.
Our point.
The landscape orientation is prioritizing dual-pane document editing, high-resolution video consumption, and heavy multitasking. To support this, they are using 120Hz LTPO OLED display.
Let's break down the mechanics of an LTPO display real quick, because it ties directly into managing the battery drain of a massive 10.2-inch screen, pushing an eye-searing 2800 nits of peak brightness.
Good idea. So LTPO stands for low-temperature polycrystalline oxide. In standard screens, the refresh rate is locked. Say, refreshing 120 times a second, which constantly drains power, even if you are just staring at a static photograph.
Right.
LTPO is a backplane technology that allows the display to dynamically throttle its refresh rate. If you are reading a static PDF, the screen drops to 1 hertz, drawing almost zero power.
Oh, that's smart.
Very smart. And the second you touch the glass to scroll, it instantly ramps back up to 120 hertz for smooth motion. And interacting with that screen relies heavily on the included M-Pencil AI stylus.
The stylus integration is just wild. It has 2 milliseconds of latency and over 8,000 pressure levels. And the AI features baked into the pencil include 98% accurate handwriting recognition, auto-shaping to turn messy circles into perfect graphics, smart sentence completion while you physically write, and real-time translation into over 50 languages.
It's impressive. But this raises an important question about the geopolitical realities shaping consumer tech right now.
How so?
Well, the Pura X Max is an absolute hardware juggernaut. It runs on a 5-nanometer Kirin 9100 chip, and it's priced globally between roughly 13,000 and 16,000 yuan.
Which is what, like 1,800 to 2,200 US dollars?
Exactly. Very aggressive pricing.
Yeah.
Releasing on April 20th, it is aimed squarely at the ultra-premium market. However, because of U.S. sanctions, it completely lacks Google services.
Right. No native Gmail, no Google Maps, no Play Store.
Nothing.
So Huawei is essentially building a parallel universe. Because they are locked out of the Western software ecosystem, they are forced to engineer their own custom 5-nanometer silicon and rely on their proprietary app gallery. They're compensating for the lack of Google by leaning entirely into custom hardware and hyper-advanced local AI.
Exactly. The geopolitical constraints are literally dictating the physical shape of the hardware. But pushing 2800 nits of brightness on a 10-inch screen while running real-time translation on custom silicon, well, it creates an unavoidable physics problem. Lithium-ion batteries have been the fundamental bottleneck of mobile tech for over a decade.
Which leads us directly into the brute force solution offered by our next source. The Vivo T5 Pro looked at the battery bottleneck and decided to solve the physics problem with sheer overwhelming capacity.
What's fascinating here is the audacity of the engineering. The Vivo T5 Pro features a 9020 milliamp hour battery.
That's massive.
Massive. To put that number into perspective, the vast majority of premium flagship phones top out around 5,000. 1,000 milliamps. This is officially the largest battery ever integrated into a commercial smartphone.
Honestly, I can't even call it a phone. This is a literal power bank that just happens to run Android and have a camera attached to it. The stamina numbers are absurd. 3 days of normal uncharged use.
Yeah.
25 hours of continuous video playback. 12 solid hours of heavy 3D gaming. But what makes absolutely no sense to me is the physical footprint. A 9,000 milliamp battery should be the size of a brick. Yet the spec sheet says it only weighs 245 grams and is 9.8 millimeters thick.
Wait, it doesn't add up on paper.
Exactly. How are they physically packing that much energy into a device that thin without it expanding or exploding?
Well, it requires abandoning traditional graphite components. Standard batteries use graphite anodes to store lithium ions. And while stable, graphite is physically bulky. Vivo is utilizing advanced silicon carbon anode technology.
Oh, silicon carbon.
Right. Silicon is theoretically vastly superior. It can hold significantly more lithium ions than graphite in a much smaller physical space. The historical problem with silicon is that it physically swells and degrades rapidly as it charges and discharges, destroying the battery.
That sounds dangerous.
It is. But by engineering a composite where carbon stabilizes the silicon matrix, they achieve a massive increase in energy density without the physical swelling. And to manage the recharge time, they implemented 80W flash charge.
So it doesn't take all day to charge.
Not at all. It's capable of bringing that massive 90-20 milliamp cell from 0 to 100% in just 65 minutes.
That's incredible. But they aren't putting this in a $2,000 flagship. They are heavily targeting the mid-range market, specifically launching in India on April 18th.
The market strategy is highly calculated here. They equipped it with a mid-range Snapdragon 7 Gen 3 processor, a 6.78-inch AMOLED display, and a 64-megapixel camera. The pricing in India is incredibly disruptive, starting at 24,999 rupees and scaling up to 29,999 rupees.
So roughly 300 to 360 US dollars?
Exactly. Yeah. Vivo recognized a massive demographic: gig economy workers, delivery drivers using constant GPS, heavy media consumers, and users in regions with unreliable municipal power grids.
Right, people who just need it to work all day.
That demographic doesn't need 8K video rendering speeds. They need a device that absolutely will not die during a 14-hour shift. Vivo sacrificed flagship processing power to achieve ultimate endurance.
Okay, so we've tracked AI software moving offline to protect our privacy. We've looked at 10-inch folding screens designed for heavy multitasking. And we've examined 9,000 milliamp silicon carbon batteries built for endless endurance. What happens when you smash all of those extremes into a single unified device?
Well, you get the convergence device, a piece of hardware engineered specifically to kill the traditional laptop. According to our sources, that threat comes in the form of the newly teased OnePlus Pad 3 Pro.
Let's run down the specs for this tablet, because they are staggering. It features a 13.3-inch OLED display with a blazing 144Hz refresh rate. It packs a 10,000 milliamp battery. It's built for productivity with a dedicated desktop mode, multi-window 3.0 capable of running 6 apps simultaneously, a native AI assistant, and a full smart keyboard with a trackpad.
It's a beast.
It really is. Expected in May 2026, it's starting at a highly aggressive $899 US. But the core of this machine is the new Snapdragon 8 Elite Gen 5 processor built on a 3-nanometer architecture.
That's the game changer.
Right. So what does this all mean for you, the listener? With a 3-nanometer chip, are Android tablets finally crossing the threshold to legitimately replace a backpack full of laptops and chargers?
The architecture is really the key to making that transition possible. When we say 3-nanometer, we are referring to the physical size of the transistors on the silicon chip. Because the transistors are microscopic, you can pack billions more of them into the same surface area.
Okay.
More importantly, the physical distance the electrical current has to travel between those transistors is drastically reduced. Shorter distance means faster processing. But crucially, it generates significantly less heat and wastes far less battery power.
So it doesn't need a fan.
Exactly. It provides the thermal efficiency required to run a massive 6-app desktop environment inside a thin glass slate without a cooling fan. But the true paradigm shift here isn't just the processor, it's the charging mechanism.
Right, the 100W Super VOOC charging.
Yeah, the OnePlus Pad 3 Pro can push 100 watts of power to fully recharge its 10,000 milliamp battery in under 40 minutes.
40 minutes for 10,000 milliamps.
Yeah. If you look at an iPad Pro or a standard Ultrabook, fully replenishing a battery of that size takes hours. The ultimate bottleneck for tablet productivity, has never been the screen size. It has always been the tether to the wall.
That makes total sense.
You cannot be a highly mobile professional if you're constantly scanning coffee shops for an outlet and waiting 2 hours to get back to full workflow capacity. OnePlus is attacking this downtime metric directly, aiming to undercut traditional laptops on price, weight, and actual mobile workflow efficiency.
It's just phenomenal to see all these disparate threads of technology weaving together. To recap our journey today, we started in a deeply unsettling place, analyzing the sheer fragility of our digital infrastructure. We saw how a simple SQL injection or phishing email could expose millions of physical addresses in a booking breach, and how a path traversal flaw leaves 50,000 servers sitting completely defenseless.
That's a scary landscape out there.
But then we explored the radical defense mechanisms being engineered directly into our local devices, from predictive RAM and localized AI privacy shields to the raw physical endurance of silicon carbon batteries and 3-nanometer processors.
And because the environment is hostile, making proactive defense essential, there are things you can do. For you listening right now, take 10 minutes today to cycle your critical passwords, activate two-factor authentication across your financial and travel platforms, and, you know, if you manage any kind of web server, ensure your systems are fully patched.
Great advice.
Beyond the immediate security hygiene, watch closely how the push toward heavy on-device AI transforms the tech in your pocket from a mere communication tool into a hardened, localized privacy vault.
Because it leaves you with a truly profound question to ponder as these technologies mature. As our local hardware acquires 9,000 milliamp batteries and hyper-efficient 3-nanometer chips capable of running incredibly complex AI models completely offline, well, will we eventually outgrow the cloud entirely? Imagine a not-so-distant future where the massive databases at companies like Booking never get hacked simply because your phone became smart enough to stop handing over your personal data in the first place.